Thank you again, Mr. Hawk. Would also like to extend greetings to those on the webcast and all of our guests we have here today. Great to have you all with us. Well, last time I had the opportunity to give a sermon here in Akron Canton, which seems like a really long time ago now, we reviewed seven different areas in which wives can serve as incredible helpers to their husbands. We talked about the help that a wife offers her husband through her understanding, her consideration, her support, her words, her affection, her perspective, and her character. And as we noted as we went through that message, many of those points and categories were valid descriptions of how a husband can be a help to his wife as well. Many of the points were applicable to both sides, and I even considered for this second message today pulling out the same 7 points, but didn't want anyone to feel like they didn't get their price of admission, so here we are. But when we concluded last time, I alluded to where we would spend our time and our focus today in this message, and you didn't know when it was going to be, so none of the men could run away, but happy to have all of you here. And as I mentioned, we had talked about looking at Proverbs chapter 31, so if you'll please turn back there with me. As we talked about last time, or mentioned along the way at least, the 31st chapter of Proverbs can be kind of an intimidating section for the ladies among us who are striving to be virtuous women. And they read through these 22 verses that describe what this virtuous wife is like in Proverbs 31, can be kind of intimidating. But I'd like for us to examine this section of Scripture today with a completely different focus. Instead of looking at these traits of the wife and what she is like, let's look for the Proverbs 31 man, because there is a man hiding here in Proverbs 31. And he's not hiding out of fear or timidity, but he's there if we look for him. We can read between the lines here and draw out some characteristics of what a Proverbs 31 husband might look like. So let's dive into the book here. We're going to actually start in verse 1, Proverbs 31 and verse 1, where we read, "The words of King Lemuel, the utterance which his mother taught him." Now, I missed my disclaimers. I want to be sure to give those again. More disclaimers again this time, just like in the message directed mostly towards wives. Once again, I am not the most experienced spouse in the room. I'm aware of that, and you are as well. And if my wife were not such a virtuous woman, she could tell you all of the ways I fall short in these areas that we'll cover today regarding husbands. But as with the message directed towards our wives as helpers, I hope this can be helpful to everyone here, whether you are currently a wife striving to help your husband, striving to grow an appreciation of him, or someone looking for your Prince Charming, or whether you're someone who is currently a husband or hopes to become one day. Hopefully there's something in here for everyone. And of course, there's always the overtones between the marriage relationship and the symbolism with Christ and the church. So even if you have no desire to be married in this physical life, there are connections there too. And I'd encourage you to look for those as well. So what can we learn as husbands from the Proverbs 31 man? Like we just read here in Proverbs 31 and verse 1, this is the words of King Lemuel, the utterance which his mother taught him. I think that's interesting to note as we begin here. If that applies to the entirety of this chapter, Proverbs 31, then this description of the virtuous wife and what we can learn about her husband, this was a mother's wisdom passed on to her husband. We could say this is a mother teaching her son, this is what you should look for in a virtuous wife. This is what you should look for in a godly woman, which is interesting to consider. It says it's the words of King Lemuel. Now, some say that King Lemuel is another name for King Solomon, or perhaps King Hezekiah. Others debate that and say, no, that it was written far after the time of King Solomon. We don't know for sure. If it was Solomon, apparently he missed the point of what his mom was teaching, and he thought, okay, so if I just collectively find all these traits and as many women as it takes, then I'll be all set. But for some reason, I don't think he was searching for all of these characteristics. I don't think that was his motivation when he had 1,000 women in his life. Anyhow, we'll drop down to verse 10, just with that background or that interesting thing to consider anyway, that perhaps this was a mother's wisdom, what to look for in a godly wife. These verses, verse 10 through 22, in the Hebrew are written as an alphabetic acrostic. And as you probably know and have heard at different times about acrostics in the Bible, Psalm 119 is an example of an acrostic in which each section of verses, each verse begins with the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet, Aleph. And then when you get down to the next set of eight verses, each word at the beginning of those verses begins with the second letter of the alphabet. Well, this is an acrostic here in Proverbs 31 also, this description of the virtuous wife. Verse 10 begins with the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet, Aleph. And it's interesting that acrostics can be used for a couple different purposes. We don't know for sure what the purpose was designed for here, but, I mean, think about it in your own life. Think about our alphabet. An acrostic, something that's written with something you need to remember regarding letter A, then B, then C, then D. It helps you with memorization, right? It's an easy way to help you remember something. So perhaps this was an acrostic poem that was taught to King Lemuel, and it would be an easy way for him to remember these characteristics to look for in a wife. Another purpose of acrostics is to symbolically cover the entirety of a subject, as if you're saying, here's everything you need to know from A to Z regarding finding a virtuous wife, or whatever the topic may be. So those are also just interesting things to consider regarding this section of Scripture. So we jump in here at verse 10. Who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. Now I said that this begins with the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet, Aleph. Obviously things are not phrased in other languages like they are in English. So the first word in Hebrew would not be who. The first word is actually the word isha. Isha. And what stands out to me and is interesting about that is this is the word that Adam uttered after Eve was created. After God had all of the animals pass before Adam, and Adam viewed all of God's creation, named each part of God's creation, and came to the conclusion that there's nobody like me. There's not a helper comparable to me. And God took a rib from Adam's side, and he created the first isha. He created the first woman, and Adam called her woman from man. He said, from man, like me. There's finally someone like me who I can relate to, who I can spend my life with. Well, that's the first word here in Proverbs 31, isha, the word for woman. When it says who can find a virtuous wife here, the footnote in my Bible, Schofield Study Bible, says this literally means who can find a wife of valor in the sense of all forms of excellence. Who can find an excellent wife like this that fits this bill, this description of virtue and excellence? And it said there in the second half of verse 10, for her worth is far above rubies. My question is, says who? Says who? Apparently, the mother of King Lemuel. But how about us, gentlemen, husbands? The first point I want to focus on this afternoon is that the Proverbs 31 husband values his wife. The Proverbs 31 husband values his wife. It's a simple concept, but it's lost on so many in our world and our society today. When we think about that creation account, when we think about God creating Eve as this special gift, this treasure for Adam, and how he responded, it's easy to see that Adam valued Eve. He valued her as this special creation, this gift. Now, granted, she was the only female in existence at the time, but when we marry, our wives should become like the only woman on the face of the planet to us too, right? She should be held in that high esteem. But unfortunately, in our world today, in our society, in our disposable society, the mentality often, when it comes to marriage, is, all right, I'll just put up with the wife that I'm stuck with. Or that disposable aspect, you know what? I have lots of ribs. God, can you make me another one? Can we try again? This one isn't working out. I'll just try again with someone new. It's sad. You know, 2 weeks ago, we celebrated our 11th wedding anniversary, which is a drop in the bucket compared to some of you here, I know. To us, it seems like a long time. But I remember in the weeks and months leading up to our wedding, it being kind of discouraging, just the attitude, the mentality that so many people have towards marriage. Some of the comments, whether in the world or in the church, comments like, good luck, or run while you can. You know, sometimes joking, but with quite a bit of truth mixed in there at times. And it was just sad that so many people viewed marriage in that way, viewed this wife that they were given as a special treasure in that way. But how does God want us to view the one that we've become one flesh with, our wife, our bride? Let's look at back at Ephesians chapter 5. We spent a little bit of time here in the last message, but we'll go back again now and focus on the sections directed towards husbands. Ephesians chapter 5. And quite honestly, this section that we're going to read here in verses 25 through 27, this is a section of scripture that I've read a number of times and kind of wondered to myself, okay, but how does this apply to me now? How am I supposed to view this now as a husband, as a physical person? You know, it talks about the connection, the symbolism between Christ and the church and the marriage relationship. But let's go ahead and read it. Ephesians 5, verse 25 says, "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her." Now that part's pretty straightforward. Not easy to do, but easy to understand at least. But verses 26 and 27 are the ones that I struggled with at times. It says, "That he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself, a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish." Now, it's easy to see how Christ does that for us, how he sanctifies us, cleanses us, cleans us up. He makes us holy. But practically speaking, how do we apply these verses to ourselves as husbands? We can't forgive our wives' sins in the sense that God does. We can't clean them up in that way. We can't make them without spot or wrinkle or without blemish. We can't make them holy. So what's the application for us? Well, I'll give all the commentary on this section to Mr. Doug Johnson from Cleveland and Meadville areas, because in a recent message, he was talking about these verses, and it really struck me what he said here about this. He was talking about this concept that Jesus Christ, in verse 27, presents the church to himself in this way. He presents her to himself as being without spot, without wrinkle, without blemish, holy. So could it be that the application for us as husbands is, how do we present our wives to ourselves? How do we view them? Do I present my wife as being precious, as being valued? Or do I focus on all the blemishes and spots and wrinkles and things that I would like to see her do better? How do I present her to myself? You know, this could really speak to just our view in our own minds. Obviously, Jesus Christ has the power to clean us up, to make us holy. But he views us that way already. We know that we're not perfectly without spot and blemish. We know we sin. We know we have room to grow in character and in the mind of Christ. But he presents us to himself as if we're already there. He views us with this loving approach, this loving opinion. He values us. And we as husbands can learn from that too, and how we present our wives to ourselves. How do I present my wife? How do I present her to myself in the way I view her? In the thoughts and the feelings I have about her, in the privacy of my own mind that nobody else knows about. How do I present her to others in the way I speak about her to other people, to friends, to family? How do I present her to herself and how precious I make her feel? just something to think about for us as husbands. As one practicing husband talking to a group of other practicing husbands, because we're all practicing, aren't we? We haven't figured it all out yet. You know, when it comes to medicine, doctors practice medicine, right? They try to analyze what the problem is. They try to give a treatment or a prescription to try to help heal what the problem is, what's going on. But if it's not working, they don't keep giving the same treatment. They try something else. The lesson for us as husbands is that if we examine ourselves and we see, you know, maybe I can grow in this area of valuing my wife, presenting her as a precious gift in the way I think about her, the way I treat her and speak about her to others. If we recognize that, then we have to try a different treatment. We can't keep doing the same things we have been doing and expect different results. Christ gives us the prescription here in Ephesians 5 to present her to ourselves as precious, as special, as valued. And that starts with the way we think about her in our own minds and our own private thoughts that no one else knows about. I heard recently someone mention that bitterness and appreciation cannot coexist. Bitterness and appreciation cannot coexist. So yes, you know, presenting our wives to ourselves as without spot and blemish, that doesn't mean we have to just say, yeah, she's perfect. Nothing she ever does bothers me. But what do we focus on? If bitterness and appreciation cannot coexist, then when we're battling those thoughts that perhaps cause us to not value her and treat her as precious like we should, how about actively bringing to mind something we appreciate about her? When you think of something that you think, yeah, that's a spot or a wrinkle or a blemish, I'd like to see that one smoothed out, present her as precious. Actively appreciate something about her by thinking about, meditating on something that you do view as beautiful, as something you appreciate about her. Let's turn back to Proverbs chapter 31. And lesson number two, or point number two that we can draw out of this section in Proverbs 31 is that the Proverbs 31 husband trusts his wife. The Proverbs 31 husband trusts his wife. I would go ahead and put a ribbon or a marker there in Proverbs 31. We will be coming and going from there throughout the message. Let's continue here. After, in verse 10, just reading, her worth is far above rubies, verse 11 says, the heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. So many of the following verses describing what this virtuous wife does, what she's like, so many of these descriptions are made possible or are enhanced by her husband's trust in her. Let's read a few of these verses and take note of that. Verse 12 says, she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. See, he trusts that everything she does is out of good motivation. He trusts that she's doing what she's doing out of the good for the team, out of the good of the one flesh team that we are when we're married. She's not doing it out of selfish ambition. He trusts her motives. Verse 13, she seeks wool and flax and willingly works with her hands. See, she's trusted enough to go out and spend part of the family budget on things that are needed. She goes and she seeks these things that she needs. And then she's frugal and willingly working with her own hands to make what is needed. Well, her husband trusts her enough to go out and make these purchases, to seek these things. Verse 14, she is like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. She also rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and a portion for her maidservants. How is trust related here? Wait, she rises while it's still night? And she travels far away by herself without a GPS tracking app on her cell phone so I can know where she is every second of the day? See, she can do these things, or they're at least enhanced by the fact that he safely trusts her. Verse 16, she considers a field and buys it. From her profits, she plants a vineyard. See, he trusts her wisdom to make sound financial decisions again, and perhaps even business decisions, knowing that they're for the benefit of the family, though. Notice it says, with her profits, she plants a vineyard. So even her motives there for making profit are for the good of the family. They're going to benefit from that vineyard. Verse 17, she girds herself with strength and strengthens her arms. We could say, she works out. And you know what? He doesn't have to ask, who are you trying to impress? Why are you getting all fancied up every time you leave the house like that? The heart of her husband safely trusts her. And verses 18 and 19, she perceives that her merchandise is good, and her lamp does not go out by night. She stretches out her hands to the distaff, and her hand holds the spindle. She perceives that her merchandise is good. And you know what? Her husband trusts her wisdom, her savvy to know the value of what she has on hand. And he trusts her expertise in those things, trusts her to use it wisely. Overall, we could say through all these verses we've just read that he trusts her ability to manage the house well without needing to micromanage every minute detail of it. He safely trusts her. And verse 11 says the result of that trust is that he will have no lack of gain. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. What's the connection there between trust and gain? Well, his trust in some of these areas, in her intentions, her faithfulness, her wisdom, her work ethic, they actually bring gain to him because they're one team, they're one flesh, with a common goal, common pursuits. They're not just roommates who live under the same roof. They're on the same path, working towards the same goals. So his trust actually benefits the team. Let's look at Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Ecclesiastes 4, we're going to read verses 9 through 12. And these are well-known verses. You may have a plaque or some word art at home with one or two of these verses on it. Maybe you got one as a wedding gift. I don't think we did, just lots of crock pots, but it's okay. People in the church are the most crock pot buying people you'll ever meet. Ecclesiastes 4 and verse 9 says, two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. So we're reading here of the benefits, the gain that comes from working together. But you know, two are only really better than one when there's trust involved. Each has his or her own set of skills to offer for the benefit of the whole, for the benefit of the team. But they reach their greatest level of productivity when there's trust involved. There's this concept in the business world called the speed of trust. There's actually a book written with that title, The Speed of Trust. I haven't read it myself, but a gentleman I used to work with was really big on this concept. And basically, to sum it up, the concept is that you can accomplish so much more when you trust the people you're working with, when you trust them to be competent enough to do their part, to fill their role well. If you have to look over their shoulder to monitor what you've delegated to them, to check and see if it's done properly, to check and see if they're doing it the way you would like it to be done or with the way you would have done it if you were doing it yourself, it slows progress down. If we don't trust the people we're working with, sometimes it yields less of a result because we're spending all of our time checking up on the other person. We could have gotten it all done faster by ourselves. There's a speed of trust. And I think that applies to marriage too. When we safely trust our wives, there's gain for us as husbands. The heart of her husband safely trusts him, therefore he has no lack of gain. So do we trust our wives enough to allow them to bring us gain, gentlemen? The Proverbs 31 husband does. Point number three is the Proverbs 31 husband is generous. The Proverbs 31 husband is generous. Let's flip back there to Proverbs 31. And you might be thinking, where do you see that in this chapter? Well, let's read verse 20. Verse 20 says, "She extends her hand to the poor. Yes, she reaches out her hands to the needy." Now that says absolutely nothing about the husband. If you notice that, good, you're awake still. That's good. But when we stop and think about this, you know, verse 16 said, true, that she had some of her profits. She bought and sold, she used her profits to plant a vineyard. And some couples may choose to have certain parts of the family budget that, hey, you can do whatever you want with that. I know that's helped us a lot over the last couple of years in our family, just to have a miscellaneous budget for each of us. Not a large amount of money, but it's helped me to not say, oh, it's a pretty picture you bought. Is it made out of vegetables? Did it come from the grocery budget? No. Obviously, there are things that we can all use finances on individually, and there's a time and a place for that. But generally speaking, we don't ask our wives for their half of the rent at the end of the month, do we? Like, our finances, our budget, it's something that we work together on as a team. Since we are one flesh, one team working in harmony, we work together on many of these financial decisions and these budgeting issues, don't we? Sometimes one spouse is more skilled in that than the other and might take the lead on financial things, but there's still a team approach. The point is that when one spouse spends money, it's not usually hidden in a corner from the other, at least in a healthy marriage. They work together on these things. So when we read here that she extends her hand to the poor, yes, she reaches out her hands to the needy, we can read between the lines there and see that he's also generous. The Proverbs 31 man isn't standing in the background while she reaches her hands out to the poor and needy, saying, "What are you wasting our money on now?" No, he's not standing there with a scowl on his face saying, "Let them fend for themselves." Her charity is an extension of his generosity too. Now, I don't know about you, how things work in your family, but that's definitely true in our family when it comes to extending the hands. Emily is usually the hands, the arms reaching out. When it comes to writing cards, making meals for someone who's sick, giving special gifts, she's just better at that than me. But it's not that she does it apart from me completely. We still work together on it. Sometimes I even come up with some of the ideas. But she has better handwriting than I do, so she usually follows through. But we're on the same page. Both of our hearts go into the giving, but she often works out the details of it. And I think we can see that here in this verse, that she extends her hand to the poor, but it's an expression of generosity on behalf of the entire family, on behalf of the couple. And there's so many proverbs about our approach to money and about greed and about giving. We can look right here in this chapter, actually. Proverbs 31, verses 8 and 9 speak to this. "Open your mouth for the speechless, in the cause of all who are appointed to die. Open your mouth, judge righteously, and plead the cause of the poor and needy." See, caring and generosity is not just a trait of the wife. The Proverbs 31 man sees the value in sharing his blessings with others as well. And he sees how it can positively affect his family and impact his family. Proverbs 22 and verse 9 says, "He who has a generous eye will be blessed, for he gives of his bread to the poor." And then we see the opposite of that in Proverbs 15 and verse 27. Proverbs 15 and verse 27 says, "He who is greedy for gain troubles his own house." So the man behind this virtuous woman in Proverbs 31, he not only provides for the needs of his household, but he also sees the benefit and understands the importance of sharing what he has with others. He's generous too. He's supportive of his wife and her kind and generous acts. She doesn't have to hide her kindness in a corner. Her kind acts are representative of the generosity of the family as a whole. So let's continue here in verse 21. Verse 21 of Proverbs 31 says, "She is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household is clothed with scarlet. She makes tapestry for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple." Point number four I want to draw out of this section today is the Proverbs 31 husband provides for his family. The Proverbs 31 husband provides for his family. Why do I bring that out from these verses? And did you notice the beginning of verse 21? She is not afraid of snow for her household. Now, I'm in no way minimizing her skills here to put the work in to create these garments for her family. But what is one of the top needs when it comes to needs of women? Isn't it security? Wanting to feel taken care of? Secure and safe. This woman is not afraid of snow when it comes. She's not afraid of what's going to happen to her household because she's taken care of. I mean, she has a lot of skills and abilities herself here, but I don't think those are just to make up for a lack in her husband. He's providing for his family as he's instructed to do in God's word too. And therefore, she has this security. She doesn't have to be afraid of what's to come. Let's turn back to 1 Timothy chapter 5. 1 Timothy 5, and we're going to read verse 8. And the Proverbs 31 husband, as we'll read later in the chapter there, it talks about him sitting in the city gates. Well, he's not sitting in the city gates because he doesn't have anything better to do. He's not sitting in the city gates because he got tired of playing his Xbox and now he just needs to get out and get some fresh air. He provides for his family as God has ordained for the husband as leader of the family to do. In 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8, we read here, "But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." Now this is in the context of providing for widows. Paul is talking about who actually is a widow that needs assistance from the church, and who is a widow who has family members who should be taking care of her. But if he speaks so strongly about providing for our own parents, so strongly to be able to say that if we don't care for our own household, we've denied the faith, how much more so does that apply to us in terms of the people that we've willingly committed to providing for, our wives and our children? You know, if to not provide for those who brought us into this world is denying the faith, how much more so to not provide for those who we've helped bring into this world and we've chosen to take care of? Now, just to make it clear, this is another one of those areas like we talked about last time in the sermon about our wives as helpers, where I think we're doing an excellent job. So some of these points are not areas of correction by any means. But they're things that the wives in the room can take note of and appreciate about their husbands. Yeah, you provide for our needs. I don't have to worry about if we're going to have what we need next week or next month or when the snow comes. I know you're going to provide for us. And I know for those who struggle with periods of unemployment or health issues, chronic health issues, this can be a point that perhaps could bring about guilt. But I don't want it to be that way at all. Because being hardworking, being a hardworking provider for your family, takes on many forms. It's more of an attitude and an approach rather than a minimum salary. Some of the hardest working people I know are people who, because of their circumstances outside of their own control, aren't able to hold a regular 9-to-5 job. But they're still providers. They have a provider mentality about their approach. They don't lack diligence. They're not sitting in the gates bored because they don't feel like going to do anything, and because their wife's so great, she's taking care of everything anyway. No. A Proverbs 31 husband provides for for his family. So if you happen to be in one of those situations, a period of unemployment or chronic health issues that keep you from maintaining that regular job, God knows that. I know that. Your wife knows that. She can see and appreciate the provider characteristics of a godly leader in you, even in those extreme circumstances. The Proverbs 31 man provides for his family in his attitude and his approach. Let's turn back to the book of Proverbs, back to chapter 31. And point number five is that the Proverbs 31 husband is a man of honorable reputation. The Proverbs 31 husband is a man of honorable reputation. We'll continue here in verse 23 of Proverbs 31, where it says, "Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land." He's known among the gates. He's sitting in an honorable position. The men who sat among the gates, among the elders of the land, these were the people who would make judgments and decisions about things. When people were having disagreements, they needed a mediator, they needed someone to make a decision, a judgment, they would go to the city gates. They would talk to these men. So this husband we see here in this chapter was an honorable man. He had a reputation of wisdom and good judgment. People came to him to seek his opinion and his advice, his wisdom. And that honor and respectability surely carried over into his family relationships. No doubt. The Proverbs 31 woman is not all of the things we read about in this chapter to somehow make up for a lack of wisdom in her husband, or a lack of character, or a lack of responsibility in him. He has an honorable reputation. He's viewed as a wise person. Continuing verse 24 here, it says, "She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies sashes for the merchants." In verse 25, "Strength and honor are her clothing. She shall rejoice in time to come." Strength and honor are her reputation, but I believe they also represent the reputation of them as a couple. They're honorable. And being a man of wisdom, of honorable reputation, can strengthen our wives in the roles that they have to fill. She can rely on him, on his good judgment, on his wisdom when it's needed. She can turn to him for advice and for wisdom. She can rely on his integrity, just like others in the community can. You know, he doesn't sit in the city gates as a man of wisdom and integrity to make good judgments there and then come home and act like a completely different person. He's consistent in character. And as a man of integrity, his respectable character is consistent both in public and in the privacy of his own home. When someone speaks positively of him, his wife and his children should be able to wholeheartedly agree, not say, "Thanks, if you only knew what he was really like." His reputation of wisdom and honor, his respectable nature, make it even easier for his wife to fill her God-given responsibility of respecting him. It's a whole lot easier to respect someone who's respectable, isn't it? And his good judgment serves as a resource to her and to the family and the decisions that need to be made and the difficulties they have to face and the things they have to overcome. He's a source of wisdom and good judgment at home, just like he is in the city gates. He's honorable. Point number six. We have eight today, by the way. I tried to balance it out, seven last time for the ladies, but sorry, guys, I guess we just need more help. We have 8 points for the men today. Point number six is that the Proverbs 31 husband is an example for his children. Proverbs 31 husband is an example for his children. We can see that here in verse 28 of Proverbs 31. It says, "Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her." Her children rise up and call her blessed. How often does that happen in our world today? How many kids have that view of their mother or their father, that they could rise up and call her blessed and praise her for being the woman that she is? Well, notice here it says they do that, and in the middle of verse 28, her husband also, and he praises her. You know, her children rising up and calling her blessed, that had to be learned from someone. It wasn't the result of her just saying enough times, "You need to show me some respect." It was modeled for them. As husbands, we can model that example of honor for our wives. We can show our children how to honor their mothers in the way we treat them. If we say, "Honor your mother, listen to her, do what she says," but then we talk about her poorly, or we are inconsiderate to her feelings, our kids are going to do what they see. They're going to mirror what they see, not just listen to the words that we say. They need an example of what honoring their mother looks like. And it goes the other way too, of course. If wives tell their children to listen to their father and honor him, but they treat his opinions like background noise, or they speak poorly of him to their friends when their kids are within earshot, we can't expect our kids to rise up and call their father blessed. We have to model it for them. Let's look at 1 Peter chapter 3. And think on that. Fathers, what are we doing to model honor for our children? Are we modeling an attitude and an approach of honoring our wives? Or are we modeling an example of taking her for granted? Are we modeling the fact that our wives are valued and worthy of honor and praise in the way we treat her? 1 Peter chapter 3. We all know the fifth commandment tells us to honor our father and our mother, but 1 Peter 3 and verse 7 here says honor is something that is a directive for husbands as well. 1 Peter 3 and verse 7. It says, "Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered." So husbands are specifically told here in this verse that we are to honor our wives. And that can be an awesome example for our kids. Giving honor to the wife. We honor her by considering her unique needs, as it says here, dwelling with her with understanding. We model honor and respect for our spouse when we support their parenting in front of our children, rather than publicly disagreeing with their parenting style in front of the kids. We model honor for them when we communicate lovingly towards our wives, when we thank them for all of their work that they do for the family, when we pitch in to help make their job of homemaker easier, rather than crossing over and expecting mom to do it all. Raise your hand if you know that term, crossing over. A few? Yep. This is something that was brought out as a principle in the Growing Kids God's Way classes that we did here a couple of years back. It's one of those annoying principles that's plagued me ever since, but it's a good one. The principle of crossing over is drawn out of the story of the Good Samaritan. When there's a man injured lying on the street, what happens? A priest walks by, and he crosses over to the other side, pretty much saying somebody else can take care of that. A Levite comes by, sees the man injured and hurt. He crosses over to the other side, saying, "Somebody else will take care of that." So the concept of not crossing over is in our day-to-day lives at home. There are opportunities throughout the day to cross over and to just expect that she'll take care of that. Somebody else will take care of that. If I balance this last piece of trash just right here, the can won't tip over. And then somebody else will get it. Or, there's still one square left on the toilet paper roll, so I mean, it's not time to change it yet. I mean, somebody else will get that. Seriously, though, these times throughout the day when we mentally cross over and expect that our wives or maybe our older children, whoever it is, might take care of those things, we're setting an example for our kids. And when we stop and take the time to think outside of ourselves, to consider the other person, and to step up and do some of those things that we can take care of ourselves rather than crossing over, we set that example of honoring our wives for our children. Let's look at Romans chapter 12 and verse 10 also. Romans 12 and verse 10. Now, this is not directly in the context of marriage, but the principle certainly applies. It says in verse 10, "Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love, in honor, giving preference to one another, putting the needs of the other above our own." We can set that example of honor for our children that way, in the way we honor our wives. I like the English Standard Version of this verse, Romans 12 and verse 10. It says, "Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor." So that's a completely different mentality of seeking to outdo one another in honor. So we show honor to our wives, and we set the example of doing so for our children when we give her preference, when we show consideration, when we put her needs above our own, when we speak to her in a loving tone. The Proverbs 31 husband is an example for his children. Let's turn back to the chapter, Proverbs 31. And we'll discuss point 7. Point 7 is the Proverbs 31 husband provides reassurance. The Proverbs 31 husband provides reassurance. Have you ever been asked, "Gentlemen, do you like my outfit? Does this look okay on me? Do you really think I'm beautiful? Are you happy with me? Do you still love me?" Typically, the response, "Yeah, you look fine," isn't what they're looking for. Or, "Yep, still love you. I'll let you know if I change my mind." Our wives need reassurance. Reassurance that we do love them, that they make us happy, that they're doing a good job filling the roles they've been given, that they're good moms, wives, friends, sisters, daughters, cousins, employees, people. They need reassurance in all of these areas. They need to know that they're valued and thought highly of. They need to be reminded of it. Even if we just told them during point number one. I mean, we just talked about valuing our wives, right? But point number one speaks more to our view, our mindset, our perception and attitude towards our wives. Providing her reassurance speaks more to the need to communicate our value of her to her in a way that she actually hears it and understands it and feels it. And we can't just say, "Yeah, I told you I loved you. I'll let you know if it changed my mind." If she needs that reassurance of your love, then she needs to hear it in a way that she understands it. The communication loop is only complete if the message is actually received. And that might be through our words, as we read here in verse 28, or it might require other methods. Proverbs 31 and verse 28, we just read, "Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many daughters have done well, but you excel them all." Now, our wives need this encouragement, this reassurance that they're doing well. Proverbs 16 and verse 24 says, "Pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones." Providing this reassurance that they need is part of dwelling with our wives with understanding. It's part of loving our own wives as our own selves. Let's go back to Ephesians chapter 5 and read a few more verses there. Our wives need to know that we're still happy with our choice. We're happy that we picked her. Our minds haven't changed, and they never will. And even though you may have told her all of that yesterday, in the silence creeps in the thought that perhaps you've changed your mind. They need reassurance. So it makes sense that the directive for husbands here in Ephesians 5 is, husbands, love your wives. But love your wives in a way that communicates love to them, in a way that they need to hear it, and as often as they need to hear it and be reassured of it. We read verses 25 through 27, but we'll pick it up in verse 28 of Ephesians 5. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. Because you're that team, you're that one flesh unit. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. And verse 33, nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. And we talked in the last message about how respect is a way that love is communicated to men. Well, this direction for us to love our wives, that has to be done in a way that is, the communication loop is completed. They receive that love. It might be through words. It might be through another method, another love language. Surely many of you here have heard of the concept of love languages, how everyone perceives love in a different way, perhaps in one particular way in the strongest form. Those five love languages that are often referred to are quality time, words of affirmation, physical touch, gifts, and acts of service. What's important for us as husbands is to recognize that these are genuine needs. In order to fulfill this requirement to love our wives as Christ loved the church, we have to find out how they feel loved, how they perceive love. It only counts as reassurance if they feel reassured. So, it fits with the model here. You know, husbands are supposed to love their wives as Christ loved the church. How did Christ express his love for us? Through self-sacrifice. He was willing to give his own life for us to express his love. So as husbands, we can't use the excuse that, well, I try to communicate love to her and she just doesn't feel loved. It's not my fault. We should be willing to lay down our lives for them, to convey our love for them. So, you know, you might not be a man of smooth words, but if that's how your wife receives love and feels loved, then we have to give it some effort. If compliments and praise don't come naturally to you, Song of Solomon is full of some really great ones. Like, you have dove's eyes behind your veil. Your hair is like a flock of goats going down from Mount Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of shorn sheep which have come up from the washing, every one of which bears twins and none is barren among them. For the kids here, that's really in this book, for real. Joking aside, we have to figure out what makes them feel loved and do those things to provide the reassurance that they need. And we could have phrased this point, a Proverbs 31 provides, compliments his wife. But that just grazes the surface here. Reassurance comes in many different forms. It might be through that quality time, that focused attention, that loving look, rather than just saying the right words at the right time. Whatever the method, provide her that reassurance, not only of her beauty, but of your appreciation of her worth, of your admiration for the roles that she's filling so well. The Proverbs 31 man is there to provide this encouragement and reassurance to the virtuous wife whenever she needs it. Let's turn back to Proverbs 31. Proverbs 31, and we'll read the last two verses here. Point number 8 is the Proverbs 31 husband supports her spiritual growth. The Proverbs 31 husband supports her spiritual growth. After just praising his wife, complimenting her, saying, many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. Verse 30 we read, charm is deceitful and beauty is passing. But a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her own works praise her in the gates. Now, if we read verse 30 alone, we might be thinking, well, Proverbs 31, woman must not have been much of a looker. He told her, charm's deceitful, beauty's passing, don't worry about that, you know, doesn't matter to me. That's not the case here. He just told her in verse 29 that she's done well, that she excels all other women. Verse 17 told us she strengthens her arms, she works out, she exercises, she keeps herself in shape. We read about her clothing herself in fine garments, scarlet, fine linen, and purple. So this isn't a shot at the Proverbs 31 woman's appearance. He just complimented her about those things. But if I could paraphrase verse 30, I would say, you are beautiful and charming, but you know what I love and appreciate about you most? Your desire to be beautiful in God's eyes. He said here, charm is deceitful, beauty is passing, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. That's what should be most beautiful to us as husbands. Having a wife who's striving to emulate the character of Jesus Christ. Having a wife who's striving to live a life with the fear of the Lord, with a reverence for him and a love of the truth. Let's go back to 1 Peter 3 again. We'll read a couple more verses there. But that's what should take the cake for us, gentlemen, is this attitude of desire to do what's pleasing in God's sight. That's what should be most beautiful to us in our wives. 1 Peter 3, verses 3 and 4 speak directly to that. In verse 3, it says, do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. Now, notice in verse 3, it says, don't let your adornment be merely outward. Peter's not saying that any of these things are wrong in and of themselves in the proper balance. It's not wrong to arrange your hair or wear gold or fine clothes, but it shouldn't take precedent over the inner person of the heart. The inner person of the heart is what's precious in God's sight, as we read here, and it's what should be precious in our sight as husbands. If we drop down to verse 7 again, we read this before, but we'll notice a different section in there. Verse 7 says, husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel. And notice, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. And we should see her as God does, as a co-heir of the kingdom of God. And we should support her in any way possible towards reaching that potential of being a child of God and his family for eternity. We do that by, first of all, leading by example as men. And we have the opportunity, the responsibility, the privilege of setting the tone in our family, setting the tone of putting spiritual things first, putting those above the physical needs, above things like arranging the hair, wearing gold, and putting on fine apparel, above the material things. We first lead by example. We also support our wives in their spiritual growth by praying for them. It says here in verse 7 that we dwell with understanding like this, thinking about the fact that our wives are also heirs of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. There's so much packed in there. We won't even get into that today. But it's incredible to stop and think that our approach and attitude towards our wives could cause our prayers to be hindered. It could cause our relationship with God to be affected if we don't appreciate our wives, understand them, consider them these co-heirs. So we can support them in their spiritual growth by praying for them. We're one flesh, right? So just as we pray for our own specific growth in spiritual matters, growth in the fruit of God's Spirit, in different sins we're trying to overcome, just as we're praying for ourselves to be more yielded to God's Spirit in our lives, that influence, we can pray about those things for our wives as well. We can ask them specifically what they would like us to pray about. And we also support her spiritual growth by freeing up time for her to pursue the spiritual things. I know this is an area where I get a giant red X at times in our lives. So focused on, okay, I need to pray and study and get ready, and we're trying to scramble out the door, and everybody else is already in the van ready to go, and oh, she just got three children ready by herself, probably made me breakfast too, arrayed herself in arranging the hair, wearing gold, and putting on fine apparel, and I didn't even stop and consider, oh, she might have needed some time by herself too. So this is an area where I know I personally need to grow, and where all of us as husbands can support her spiritual growth by giving her the time she needs for those things. You know, we guard that time in our own schedules, but we can help guard that time for her too by creating some type of plan for that. It might require sacrifice on our part, but that fits the model of loving our wives as Christ loved the church. Not too long ago, I remember talking to someone who said her husband asked, "Do you want me to help with the dishes? If you want me to help with the dishes, I'll do that." And she said, "Honey, I just want you to love me like Christ loves the church. So if you think Christ would help his wife with the dishes, you go ahead and help me with the dishes." That is just mean and wrong. Sometimes self-sacrifice is required on our part in order to support her and her needs. Well, Proverbs 31 continues to be a section of scripture that's packed full with insight and perhaps even intimidating descriptions of what a virtuous wife can be. But as I hope we've seen today, it's not a section of scripture that we as men should overlook or avoid, because there are lessons here for us too. Now, after the last message, it wouldn't be fair if I ended this one without some suggested action steps, so here are a couple. For the ladies among us, take some time, perhaps this week, to think about each of these qualities of a godly husband. Think about each of these 8 points we've discussed today. And be specific and write down one way your husband displays each of these 8 characteristics from your point of view. And share that list with him. Give him that positive feedback, what he's doing well, how he is like this Proverbs 31 man in these ways. Focus on the positive rather than all the areas you would like to see him improve. You don't have to play this message on automatic replay throughout the week for him. But for the gentleman, think through this list, these 8 characteristics or qualities of the Proverbs 31 man, and come up with one specific thing you can do related to each of them to convey love to your wife and be a better husband in the days and weeks ahead. And you too, be specific. Something specific you can do, not just, yeah, I'm going to be more honorable. What specifically are you going to do to set that example of honor? Or what specifically are you going to do to present her to yourself as valued? Come up with one specific action step for each of these points. And communicate those to her through your actions. You don't have to share that list, but share it through your attitude, your approach, your actions in the weeks ahead. And by doing so, we can help our wives become the virtuous women that they strive to be, as described here in Proverbs 31, by becoming more like the Proverbs 31 husband. Because there is indeed a man hiding here in Proverbs 31. And when his characteristics are reflected in us, we can help our wives become women whose worth is truly far above rubies.